Hi, welcome to Bookie, which unlock big ideas from world bestsellers in audio, text, and mind map. Please download Bookie at Apple Store or Google Play with more features. Get your free mind snack now. Today, we will unlock the book Think Again, The Power of Knowing What You Don't Know by Adam Grant. Most of us see mistakes as something to be avoided and being wrong as something undesirable. Yet in this book, Grant opens our minds to a different way of living, one in which being wrong is something to embrace. In today's day and age, our views have become increasingly polarized. Differing political beliefs and contrasting positions on vaccinations have torn friends and families apart. This increased polarization has been further aggravated by technology. Technology has made it easier for people to seek out information that affirms their own views and to communicate with like-minded people so that they remain within their own echo chambers. After all, it is a human tendency to stick with what we are comfortable with rather than confront ideas that challenge the way we think. We prefer being right over being wrong. In this situation, Adam Grant's book is a timely and much-needed reminder that the truth is more important than being right and that the only way to get there is to be open to views that are different from our own. In other words, to think again. This book is packed with stories and anecdotes of real people who have been masters at the art of rethinking in their own ways. From how a black musician persuaded white supremacists to leave behind their hate, to how a vaccine whisperer managed to convince parents who have reservations about vaccines to immunize their own children, Grant provides us with engaging and inspiring examples of how the art of rethinking can transform not just our own lives, but the lives of those around us. Now, let us better understand the contents of Think Again by exploring three key parts. Part 1, Individual Rethinking, How to Achieve Rethinking. Part 2, Interpersonal Rethinking, How to Influence Others to Rethink. Part 3, Collective Rethinking, How to Create Communities of Lifelong Learners. Part 1 addresses the various ways in which we can overcome the trap of being stuck in our own beliefs and acquire the habit of rethinking. Have you ever paid attention to how you behave when confronted with beliefs or perspectives that are different from your own? Grant points out that in such situations, many of us tend to get stuck in the mode of preacher, prosecutor, or politician. In preacher mode, we lapse into sermons that promote our ideals. In prosecutor mode, we focus on tearing down arguments that are against our beliefs, and in politician mode, we aim to earn the approval of our audience. What do all these modes have in common? They all prevent us from re-examining our own beliefs. In Grant's words, we are often so wrapped up in preaching that we're right, prosecuting others who are wrong, and politicking for support that we don't bother to rethink our own views. Mike Lazaridis, creator of BlackBerry, is an example of someone who fell into this trap. BlackBerry started out as a highly successful venture, and at one point in 2009, it dominated nearly half of the entire US smartphone market. Yet by 2014, its market share had plummeted to less than 1%. The arrival of Apple's iPhone was, of course, a major threat to BlackBerry, but what finally destroyed it was the CEO's own thinking. Lazaridis maintained his belief in BlackBerry's features. He continued to preach the idea of a wireless device for work emails and calls while prosecuting Apple's vision of providing people with a computer small enough to fit in their pockets. Like a politician, he focused only on the needs of his existing fanbase while ignoring other emerging market needs. When his staff pitched other ideas, like adding an internet browser or encrypted text messages, for example, he dismissed them rather than put them to the test. In a world where technology evolves quickly, clinging to the preacher, prosecutor, and politician mindset cost Mike Lazaridis dearly. BlackBerry quickly lost its footing in the smartphone market and became obsolete. Like Mike Lazaridis, many of us often fail to see our blind spots because we are driven by two types of biases: confirmation bias, which is seeing what we expect to see, and desirability bias, which is seeing what we want to see. If we fall prey to these biases, we are more likely to lapse into the mode of preachers, prosecutors, or politicians and slip into a vicious cycle called the overconfidence cycle, in which the more we play preacher, prosecutor, or politician, the more we are unable to see our limitations and the more convinced we become of our own beliefs. This propels us back into confirmation bias and desirability bias, and so on. How, then, do we break out of this overconfidence cycle? Grant's answer is that we should start thinking like a scientist, rather than a preacher, prosecutor, or politician. For a scientist, rethinking is a part of the job. A scientist is required to constantly question what they know and update their understanding based on new findings or research. Hence, when we put on the hat of a scientist, rather than focusing on defending our own beliefs, we become focused on arriving at the truth. Not only would we react to other beliefs with an open mind, we would also even actively seek out evidence that disproves our own hypotheses and look for reasons why we might be wrong. Changing our mind, which is seen as a sign of weakness in the preacher, prosecutor, or politician, is a sign of intellectual integrity in scientists. Scientists start from a premise of intellectual humility, recognizing that their knowledge is imperfect, and so should we, according to Grant. This leads to doubt, and as we question our existing understanding, we gain curiosity about new information. New information provides new discoveries, which once again reinforces our humility, as we realize that we have much to learn. In this way, the overconfidence cycle is broken and replaced by a cycle of rethinking. There are people who are experts at adopting the scientist mode; they see being wrong as a joy and embrace it. Nobel Prize-winning psychologist Daniel Kahneman is one of them. He says, "Being wrong is the only way I feel sure I've learned anything." How do people like him do it? One of the answers is learning to detach your opinions from your identity. As Kahneman says, "My attachment to my ideas is provisional. There's no unconditional love for them." Most of us define ourselves based on our beliefs and ideas, but we should instead focus our identities on what we value, such as principles like freedom and fairness. If our identity is based on values rather than ideas, we learn not to be overly attached to them, and we become more open to new ways of advancing the principles we hold dear. We can see how important it is to maintain intellectual humility and embrace the joy of being wrong in order to not be trapped in the overconfidence cycle. It's equally important to recognize that humility is not synonymous with self-doubt and low self-esteem. In Grant's words, it's about being grounded, recognizing that we're flawed and fallible. In other words, it involves acknowledging that we may not have the right tools at present to achieve a certain goal while maintaining the self-belief that we will be able to acquire these tools to reach that goal eventually. Grant calls this the sweet spot of confidence, a combination of confidence and humility that gives rise to confident humility. Halla Thomas' daughter, a dark horse who came in second in Iceland's presidential elections in 2015, embodies this trait well. Thomas' daughter was someone who had suffered from imposter syndrome from a young age despite her many achievements. She never felt like she deserved her success and did not take her achievements for granted. However, this imposter syndrome turned out to play a key role in her eventual success. Feeling like an imposter motivated her to work harder and smarter. It also made her a better learner, as doubt about her knowledge and skills propelled her to seek help from experts where necessary. Of course, this was only possible because her imposter syndrome was not so debilitating as to pull her down. While she doubted her tools and her strategies, she had confidence in herself as a learner and in her creativity and wisdom. Being in the sweet spot of confident humility allowed her to emerge as a dark horse in Iceland's 2015 election, ending up in the final four candidates even when she started off polling at only 1%. On the other hand, one of her contenders, Dov Oddsson, was the opposite. He suffered from armchair quarterback syndrome, which describes someone whose confidence exceeds their competence. His arrogance prevented him from re-examining himself, and despite starting out as a heavyweight contender, he finished in fourth place, losing to Thomas' daughter. As Grant puts it, arrogance leaves us blind to our weaknesses. Humility is a reflective lens; it helps us see them clearly. Confident humility is a corrective lens; it enables us to overcome those weaknesses. Finally, rethinking cannot take place without being challenged by others. It is by constantly challenging each other, for instance, that the Wright brothers eventually arrived at a breakthrough that led to the invention of the airplane. In the months leading up to their successful creation of the propeller, they argued constantly. Indeed, their feud was so aggressive that their younger sister even threatened to leave. However, one morning after the biggest shouting match of their lives, they went back to the place where they worked, shifted into scientist mode, and finally reached a breakthrough. The constant arguing over each other's ideas allowed them to identify problems with both of their approaches, which ultimately pushed them to arrive at an optimum solution. In the case of Wright brothers, you can see that they formed a challenge network, which compelled them to rethink their ideas. A challenge network is a group of people we trust to point out our blind spots and help us overcome our weaknesses. So, how can we build one for ourselves? One thing to note is that the individuals who make up your challenge network should be unafraid to speak their minds and question the way things are, but they should also not be so disagreeable as to create an atmosphere of animosity. Grant identifies two types of conflicts: relationship conflicts and task conflicts. Relationship conflicts are conflicts of a personal and emotional nature that generally lead to lower morale and poorer performance. Task conflicts are conflicts over ideas and opinions, and these are correlated with higher innovativeness and better decisions. People within a challenge network should help to facilitate the latter rather than the former, and this requires them to criticize from a position of care and support. Hence, Grant calls them disagreeable givers. It is not easy to be adept at or to find disagreeable givers who are adept at facilitating task conflict and fostering constructive disagreement. We can practice how to foster task conflict more effectively by doing two things: framing a dispute as a debate rather than a disagreement, and focusing on how to achieve a goal rather than preaching about why we are right. Even if we are, by nature, agreeable people, it doesn't mean that we should shy away from such conflict or disagreement. Ultimately, agreeableness is about seeking social harmony, not cognitive consensus. It's possible to disagree without being disagreeable. Today we are just sharing limited content. To unlock more key insights of world-class bestseller, please download our app. Just search for BOOKEY at Apple Store or Google Play. Get your free mind snack now.
Dir hat dieser Podcast gefallen? Dann klicke jetzt auf Abonnieren und empfehle ihn weiter. Bleib immer auf dem Laufenden und folge uns bei Twitter, Instagram und Facebook. Mehr Podcasts findest du auf meinpodcast.de.